Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, does Islam really ban women from driving?
Manal al-Sharif, a women's rights activist from Saudi Arabia, was arrested and detained for driving a car and posting a video on Facebook in May. Her detention was increased by a further 10 days. Since her arrest, further videos of Saudi women drivers have emerged on the internet. A mass protest against the ban has been planned through Facebook. Saudi Arabia is the only Muslim country to impose the ban on women to drive. In this episode, Islam and Life discusses whether Islam really does ban women from driving.
During these last days, we have heard about what is happening in Saudi Arabia with women being mobilized to try to find a solution to this and to challenge the government and even the religious authority as to the ban on driving for women and saying that it's anti-Islamic. And as it was said in the clip, this is the only country in the world where the woman cannot drive because it is said Islam is prohibiting this for women. So let us come to not only this question, because this question is revealing an understanding about women's rights within Islam, which is sometimes problematic and understood in a way which should be questioned or at least understood. So these are questions for and through this controversy that are important to today, because this is the starting point of everything, why a woman cannot drive and in which way she has to get her rights in the in a Muslim majority country in the name of Islam, and sometimes against a wrong and narrow understanding of the scriptural sources. Well, to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Rebecca Mastertron, a prominent public speaker and a lecturer at Islamic College of London. Thank you for being with us today. We have watched the clip, what is said about even Manal Sharif trying to challenge the government by saying this is wrong. She is a practicing Muslim. She is a Muslim woman, and she is saying to the government, that's wrong. What you are doing is discriminatory towards women. So let us try to start first to understand how do you understand this from an Islamic viewpoint, that a country, a government, a state is saying it's against Islam? Mm-hmm.
We can look at the interpretation of certain narrations going back to the Holy Prophet, or which are said to go back to the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, which say that a woman cannot travel without a male guardian, a male member of her family, who is she's legally allowed to be with alone. Some narrations say she cannot take a journey of more than 2 days. Some say she can't take a journey of more than 3 days without a mahram, without her guardian. And so it seems that this has been interpreted to mean that she can't travel at all. There's also the narration that a woman needs to get permission from her husband before she leaves the home. But this, is, again, is open to interpretation, whether this is a polite formality to just be courteous to your husband and say, do you mind if I go out? Or whether it is actually, you know, enforced to such an extent as it has been in Saudi Arabia, that in fact her entire movements are restricted by law, and that she has to get written permission from a mahram in her family to go anywhere.
Hmm. So this is something which is one, again, we heard from the religious authorities in Saudi Arabia, is to say what you said, the reasons, and it's all based on specific interpretations of specific scriptural sources, and mainly the hadith. There is one that you mentioned, which is really important, is about, you know, is a woman free to travel alone, and how, and under which conditions. The second is, once again, the permission, and there is also something that some are adding, is that she's in a closed space, so anything could happen because she's on her own, and this cannot be possible. When she's publicly on her own, then anything could happen, and this is against the understanding of some hadith, prophetic traditions. So we have specific interpretations here. Still, the great majority of the scholars around the world are saying that these are very, very narrow interpretations, if not a distortion of the very essence of what is said.
Yeah. So
what would you say about this interpretation? How do you see this? How do you explain that we have such interpretations today?
It could possibly, and it's difficult to ascertain, but it could possibly go back to the role that a woman has within her tribe or her clan, let's say, because we know that across the Muslim world, things still function very much according to clan, according to, and the woman is very important in terms of maintaining the honor of the family. There are interpretations, for example, according to the Shafi'i school, according to the school of Ahlul Bayt, alayhim salam, as well, that a mahram is actually doesn't necessarily have to be a male member of the family. The mahram can be a woman, a woman that you're traveling with. It can be a group of women, and it is even said that it's actually advised even for men to travel with a companion, not to travel alone. So if we look at the circumstances in which these may or may not have been said at the time. Of course, Arabia at that time, the time of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, did not have, you know, police, and it was a dangerous place. But now it's interesting as to why it has been interpreted in this way, in such a restrictive way, that women cannot have this freedom of movement. And of course it creates a lot of problems in the society, because often the woman has to end up traveling with a non-mahram, with a driver, for example. Of course she has to be able to afford a driver as well. So,
but there is a, before coming to that point, because it's really interesting that sometimes we end up with solutions that are even problematic from a very strict Islamic viewpoint. But there is something which you said which is very important here, is that the interpretations that we have in some Arab countries, for example, not only but everywhere in the world, but in some Muslim majority countries, especially in Saudi Arabia, which is problematic because it's perceived, and it is the center for all the Muslims, the symbolic spiritual center. We have a very strong cultural weight on anything which has to do with interpretation. So what you are saying about tribes and clans, and it's coming from the Arab culture much more than the Islamic text, and then it's projected onto the interpretation of the text and say, okay, we can't do this because this is the honor of the tribe or that family, while the Quran is not saying this. And then what we had, and coming from the mainstream, you refer to Shafi'i, to some of the in the Shia tradition scholars saying, no, it's not at all this. Mainly why this question of traveling alone was put is to get security. So anything which has to do with the security of the beginning of the travel, the end of the travel, during the travel, that's fine. Even you can go on your own. Some are saying this, and others are saying it could be anyone who is traveling with you and protecting you. So this is not a problem. So, and then this the way of being isolated in public. It's in fact when you are in a car and you are traveling, you might be in the public sphere much more protected than if you are on your, in any public transport, for example, yeah. during the evening, and even if you are with a driver who is not from your family. So we end up with solutions that are problematic because we are dealing with a way which is much more cultural than really Islamic. This is one. And second, very narrow interpretations. And at the end, we need to put the question, why in such a society where now we are dealing with the world and everywhere the Muslim women are driving, practicing Muslim women, very committed yeah. to their religion, and we still are struggling for very basic rights at the center.
I mean, it's interesting because, I live here in the UK, but I've heard it be said, for example, someone calculated the distance that it would take for a camel, for example, to travel 3 days, and it's 48 miles. And I remember being told, well, you can't travel for more than 48 miles without a mahram. And I said, well, my mother lives 52 miles from me. How am I going to travel? It's just not practical. There is also another hadith or narration that is attributed to the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, which says, where he says to somebody, there will come a day where a woman can travel on her own very freely. So it's not like he hasn't actually, even if those hadiths were authentic that are attributed to him, he hasn't said that it is absolutely, prohibited until the end of time, she cannot travel. What he's saying is, or what he is said to have said, is that there will come a day when it will be safe enough for her to travel. So what it sounds like is that, as you say, it was his concern for her safety. We're now living in times when there are, if you count 3 days travel now, that would be several times around the world. There are many safety procedures in place. It's possible to travel safely.
But this is exactly what we are facing. The first, that what you are saying about the interpretations of the text is the literalist interpretation of the text. Is he said 3 days at that time it was with camels? What does it mean on the scale of distance? It's just a very narrow understanding. Is that what did he mean by this?
Yeah.
What did he mean? Did he mean that it was once again safety and security, which was the great majority of the scholars today are saying this is it. And the point is, as you said, one day the world is going to be more secure, more safer for women, and this is an understanding which is exactly opposite of this very narrow literalist interpretation. And we are still struggling with this among Islamic trends, very narrow understanding. And in fact, and this is where it's quite important, the perception is the narrow interpretation of the text is helping something which is another vision of what a Muslim majority society should be,
yeah.
with the woman being visible, working, traveling, studying, being involved in all the dimensions of life, from social, institutions to politics and economy. And I think that this is where we have this main problem. The starting point is not to get that right, to avoid being empowered in the society. So you, as a woman, a practicing woman, you are living in the UK. How do you see this? And how, from an Islamic viewpoint, you think that we have to resist? Because what is done, for example, by Manal, it's quite courageous. He's saying, no, we are not going to accept this. Because at the end of the day, we are using Islam against your discriminatory policies. What would be your take on that?
I have actually had to face this myself because I do travel. and actually, being in the UK, you need to travel. You need to go to Muslim countries to regenerate, to get out of the kind of London materialistic kind of culture. I'm not saying that Muslim countries aren't materialistic either, but at least there are...
But sometimes in Saudi Arabia, you need to travel as well.
Yeah. So we need to travel. Going back to the Holy Quran, it says travel in the land. It actually tells us. It doesn't just address to men. It tells us to travel in order for us to learn about other cultures. It tells men and women to seek knowledge. It's incumbent upon us from the Holy Prophet to seek knowledge. Some scholars have interpreted that it's okay for a woman to travel in search of education and yes. knowledge mm. as well. Mm. So it's actually preventing women from gaining a broader understanding of the world, seeking knowledge. Mm. And my suspicion is that what has happened is that in a way the scholars in Saudi Arabia have put themselves in a position where they've made things so black and white, so rigid, that if one person starts to protest against that, a whole lot of other people are going to come forward with their issues as well. Because if you read about other restrictions that are in place on other groups, it's not just women traveling, it's journalists traveling, it's Christians, as you say, Shias and Qatif as well. Mm. Who can be a scholar and who can't be, you know, who's got the authority. So my suspicion is that part of their fear is not so much based on Islamic interpretation, but it's also to do with, okay, if this person starts to agitate for this, this person's going to come forward.
Yes, I think you are right. There is a policy, there is a vision of what a Muslim majority country should be and what is an Islamic state.
Yeah.
Still, it's the way we deal with freedom and you know, the free people and free conscience and free way of practicing.
Yeah.
Still, at the same time, and I think it's quite important, we can't very often in the West, we look at this and we just extract or yeah. focus on one problem and we don't see the whole dimension. The comprehensive approach is to say, yes, we are talking about the lack of freedom, discrimination towards women, but there are so many other things
yeah.
that are exactly going in the same way. Still, I think it could be quite interesting to focus on women to help the people to understand what is at stake, because what is happening still in Saudi Arabia today is we have women who are much more educated now. They are going to universities.
Yeah.
They are now, you know, they dare to speak and they say, we are not going to accept that. So I think that this vision that there is a monolithic situation where the people cannot do anything, with everything which is happening, even in the uprisings in Egypt,
yeah.
in Tunisia, in Syria, in Yemen, in Bahrain, all these are just showing that now some are pushing from within. And at the same time, what we are saying here, which is important, is this is not anti-Islamic. This is done in the name of Islam against certain interpretation. As you say, it happened before that, you know, even the scholars were saying, what is the illah, what is the raison d'etre of one hadith and
yeah.
one rule, is to understand the vision. And what you are saying is that at the end of the day, how are you going to prevent women from getting knowledge, from seeking knowledge, from being autonomous, from being empowered in their society? You can't resist anything which has to do with the world culture if you are neglecting half of the Muslim community. So how can we, from where you are, what should be the way forward to change this situation?
I have to salute the women, brave women out there who are driving. This isn't to say that all women in Arabia agree that women should drive.
Yes,
there's
that's
even
true.
That,
yeah.
that
mm-hmm.
debate going on where some women are actually saying, no, we shouldn't drive. But, you know, I think it should be, let people have a choice, because people live under different circumstances. If you don't want to drive, fine, have your driver. Mm-hmm. But there are women who need to drive. And actually, we could say Arabia is shooting itself in the foot, because mm-hmm. if a woman is not able to travel, to communicate, to gain knowledge, to teach, and to communicate with other cultures, she's actually, you know, it actually puts Arabia itself, the culture of Arabia, behind other
yes.
cultures
yes.
that are going
yes.
on.
Mm-hmm.
So in restricting women in that way, based upon, again, this interpretation that is, it doesn't look, as you say, at the reason behind why this was said. It's literally just look at the text on the page, that's what it says, and it's not thinking about as you say, the purpose for why
yes.
it was said.
Yes, and I think that there is something which is still very important for all the Muslims around the world and the contemporary Muslim conscience, is to say, look, we have to be self-critical. Sometimes Islam is used to support cultural attitudes that are not Islamic. Sometimes Islam is used to discriminate, to was, you know, it could be poor people, it could be women, it could be even, you know, racist stance against, you know, the way some people are treated in you know, the Pakistani people and all the poor people are treated in a way which is, well, very close to slavery.
Yeah.
So the Muslims should ask themselves, we can't just blame the West. It's not the West who is imposing this onto us. Mm. It's us who have to look at ourselves and to say, as Muslims, it's enough. We have to be self-critical and to say, this is not Islamic. This is a way to understand Islam which is promoting discrimination. And in the name of Islam, it's very important to resist. And as you were saluting, you know, women who are courageous just to drive and to say, we are not going to accept. We have so many other women, even in Saudi Arabia, who are doing this. And at the same time, we have to be very cautious, because if we don't dare to speak, we are promoting a kind of hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Because we have so many women, they have this attitude over there, they leave the country and they remove everything from the headscarf to the even, you know, anything which has to do with an Islamic behavior. So I think that this is why we want you, from where you are, to be vocal, isn't it? Are you?
yes, well, I do my best to be vocal. about many things, and I think it is as well to do, you know, a lot of problems that go back to the Muslim world is that it's this desire to cling on to worldly power. Islam, the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his family, was his lesson was, if you go after worldly power, you're actually going to restrict yourself. Mm-hmm. And we could see, for example, now that Saudi society has been constructed in such a way as to put men in a very nice position. Mm. So they're not going to particularly be happy to lose that kind of position that they have. So they have this certain status, they have a position in their society. And in a way, it's a clinging to worldly power. Mm. And they've really got to go back to the fundamental message of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him and his family. Look at what the women in his life, the role that they played. They were on the battlefield there with those who were fighting in battle. There's even it is even said that Khadija, his wife, travelled on camel and horse as well. So there's the evidence.
Thank you so much. I think it was important in our discussion to come back to what is happening in Saudi Arabia, but also to try to understand what is behind the scene is a specific interpretation of Islam, narrow literalist interpretation of Islam based on ahadith, prophetic traditions, that no one can deny that they exist. But the way they are read, the way they are interpreted is very narrow, and sometimes going against even the spirit, the illah, the raison d'etre, the purpose of it, when it has to do, according to the great majority of the scholars from all the traditions, Sunni and Shia all together agreed it's a question of safety and security and not a question of preventing women from traveling and seeking knowledge, for example. And this is why it's quite important to be self-critical and to say, this is where the Muslims should look at themselves, understand that we need more education about Islam, more understanding of the scriptural sources and the prophetic traditions, as you are saying at the end right now, and also a better understanding that at the end, it's the whole Muslim majority society that will take advantage of such a situation, because with women more educated, empowered, present in the public life, it's going to help the whole of the societies. And this is something which is so important for us, so self-critical approach, it's important. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
We'd like to hear your views on today's show, as well as ideas for future programs. You can do this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also join our Facebook page by searching Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can view past programs, keep up to date on future shows, leave comments, and meet other Islam and Life fans.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Rebecca Masterton. Thank you so much for that and being vocal on such an important topic. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.